Support comes from the Missouri Forest Products Association. Missouri produces wood pallets, railroad ties, white oak barrels, hardwood floors, and more. Details on the variety of products made in the state are at choosewood.com.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha.
Did you really want to be Secretary of State?
Out of all the ones that were available and you know, potentially possible, I thought that SOS was the best one.
This intense legislative fight between GOP leadership and the Missouri Freedom Caucus.
I'm not going to stoop to that level. I'm going to be honest with folks that I represent. At some point, we made the decision it wasn't worth it. So.
The race for Missouri's Secretary of State is generating some serious political heat. The Republican primary is packed with competition, and just this week, three more candidates entered the fray, bringing the total number to 9. Now, this flood of new challenges isn't coincidental. It follows a surprising announcement last week that was made by State Senator Caleb Rowden, who launched his campaign for Secretary of State last year. Rowden represents Columbia, and he isn't just any state senator. He's the president pro tem of the state Senate. He's had experience winning tough elections. And compared to the other Republican candidates running to be Secretary of State, he had spent the most campaign money. And that's had past tense because on Monday, March 18th, Rowden announced he was dropping out of the race. To talk about his reasons and his message for the other GOP candidates still in the race, Caleb Rowden sat down with St. Louis Public Radio's Jason Rosenbaum and Sarah Kellogg, hosts of the Politically Speaking podcast.
There's a couple reasons we wanted to have you on today. You made the announcement that you are not actually going to be running for Secretary of State or any statewide offices this year. You had announced you were going to run for Secretary of State last year. Why did you decide to pull the plug on this campaign?
Well, we started the process. We announced latter part of October, I believe, last year, started to go through the process, raising money, doing all those things, and then obviously hit session, which, puts a little bit of a squeeze on your ability to campaign. But, we kept, Aubrey's my wife, we had kept having conversations. Obviously we knew there was the announcement window in October, but obviously filing, we're in that window now, started at the end of February. And so we knew we wanted to keep talking. We wanted to make sure that this was the right thing to do. It was I told a lot of people when she and I decided to make the decision to run for the House in 2000, I think it would have been 2011. We had been married for about 6 years. We didn't have any kids. A much different stage of life than now, being married for almost 20 years, 3 kids, just a lot of different variables. And so we wanted to make sure that the decision was right. And, at some point we came to the conclusion here in the last few weeks that I think there's better ways that she and I can serve our community and find ways to give back to this community, a community that we love, and also do it in a way that's not, potentially harmful for our kids. They're all there doing different things and need us. And so I wanted to make sure that I was making the decision that was in the best interest of the kids and maybe not the decision that I thought was the best for my political future. So that's the decision we made.
Did you really want to be Secretary of State?
Well, I think if I were to have run for something, Secretary of State was the one certainly that was the most appealing to me. I mean, I think it's not, I'm not trying to discount or, say anything negative about the other jobs. Secretary of State's a real job. I mean, there's, lots of, a lot of important things under there, hundreds of employees within the Kirkpatrick building and other places. And, it was something that was, I didn't want to just run and have a title. I wanted it to mean something, to be something. And I thought that SOS was the, out of all the ones that were available and potentially possible, was the best one. So that was the calculation initially for deciding, hey, let's go the SOS route.
You mentioned that consensus building was a trait that used to be admired in the legislature, and now that is no longer the case. What did you mean by that?
Well, I mean, I think we, you know, everybody runs on a platform. Everybody runs as a member. Most people run as a member of a party, whether it's Republican or Democrat or Libertarian. But you know, when you get to the legislature, when you get to Congress, wherever you are, you know, you're charged with governing, and governing, I think, looks and feels a lot different than campaigning does more times than not. It doesn't mean that you don't do the things, you don't hold the same values that you said when you were campaigning, but you know, you guys cover the legislature for a long time, have for a long time. You know, a lot of the issues that we talk about, specifically in the Senate, aren't really all that partisan. You know, 90%-ish of the votes that we take are bipartisan in nature. And so, you know, I think the focus on the red line type things that tend to get people ginned up and the use of rhetoric and language that I think folks, you know, sometimes know to be not true, but just do it to, you know, try to get a little rise out of the constituency. You know, it just was not ever something that was appealing to me. I don't care enough about being in politics to not be willing to explain the nuance to people. And so, you know, that has gotten me in hot water over times. I've taken votes that the further right contingent of the Republican Party didn't appreciate, and that's fine. It's the nature of the beast. But I came to the conclusion a long time ago, whether or not I was going to run for office in the future, that, you know, it wasn't worth changing who you are. It wasn't worth, you know, lying to voters. It wasn't worth, you know, trying to drop seeds of untruth just to try to, you know, get them to see you in a better light. And so, you know, all of that stuff has weighed on me over the course of time. It's just not who I am. You guys know me well enough to know I don't say a lot of negative things about other people. Everybody has their motivations. Everybody has their reasons why they decided to get into politics. And for me now, I've decided to get out. So I can only speak for myself. I can't speak for anybody else. And I think, you know, they probably would have a different view of why they're doing what they're doing and trying to get to a place that allows them to have the power to make the change that they want to make. It's just not who I am. And at some point it got pretty tiring to have to, you know, either you play the game or you get called names and, you know, you're not a Republican. You're all these other things. At some point we made the decision it wasn't worth it. So,
well, I want to be more specific about what you're talking about. You had voted when you were in the House against a proposed constitutional amendment that would have allowed businesses to deny service to, you know, people that want to buy a service for a same-sex wedding. And you had also voted for Medicaid expansion when it came up for a vote, I think, a couple of years ago. Are those the types of things that you think could have been used against you in a primary process where, like, being the quote-unquote most conservative person kind of has premium with the Republican base?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, specific to my – the short answer is, yeah, I mean, I've got plenty of votes I'm sure that could have gotten used against me. I have no reason to believe, based on the amount of money that we had and the amount of money that had been committed – I think I was going to win this race. I don't think that anybody else, at least in the current field, was going to have enough money to define me in any other way than what I could define myself. So I wasn't, you know, it wasn't a matter of you know, trying to sidestep those types of votes because I'm not sure the money was going to be there in a down ballot statewide. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things. There's votes that I've taken, you know, plenty of them that, you know, I thought was the right thing at the moment. And, you know, I always had the ability to, and I had to because of the positions that I was in leadership. You know, I was able to defend that, talk about why I did it, the decision-making process that got me to where I was. Those are not always, it's not an easy process to get to the point on, you know, big kind of contentious issues that, you know, are going to be, you know, kind of political punching bags. It's not always easy to get to that vote. And so, you know, I used a pretty stable and kind of constant process. I've always had really, really good staff
We talk a lot about these things, folks inside the building, folks outside the building, and, you know, kind of get to the point we say, okay, this is what the right thing is in this moment. It may not be the most politically expedient thing. I remember getting yelled at by my, some of my political folks about the Medicaid expansion vote a few years ago. But we kind of stuck to that process. The folks inside the building, we stuck to the process and said, hey, look, let's define what right is based on, you know, what our principles are and what our core beliefs are. And then let's make the vote that most closely resembles that. And so I'm proud that we've been able to stick to that. And I'm going to walk out, you know, with my head held high. And I think it would have been hard for anybody to represent this area. And this area being a, you know, a center left area, and to climb into the positions of leadership that I did, and not operate the way that you operated. And so I think we did everything the right way, and I'm proud of the resume and the legacy that we're going to leave.
And conversely, even though I mentioned that you strayed from your party on a couple of those issues, you also voted with your party on things like banning most abortions and barring most minors from accessing puberty blockers and hormone therapy, also the so-called Second Amendment Preservation Act, which disincentivized law enforcement from trying to enforce federal gun laws. I know that you probably like agreed with those bills philosophically, but do you think that those types of things that you voted on contributed to the atmosphere where consensus building, at least between the two parties, wasn't seen as something worth doing as much anymore?
Well, I think we, I don't know that I would see that, because the last couple of years, I have a really good relationship and have had a traditionally good relationship with all of the, minority leaders that I've served with when I've been in these positions of leadership, Gina Walsh, and now J.J. Rizzo and I are very close. You know, you can never lose sight of the fact that when I was the majority leader and now when I'm the pro tem, you know, you are leading a still historically large Republican majority. I got there in 2012, and the House had a veto-proof majority. The Senate had a veto-proof majority. I've never, in 12 years, have never served in a legislature that didn't have veto-proof Republican majorities. So that comes with the pressure and the motivation to do some of the things, that Republicans sent you there to do. So, I mean, there are red line days. I call them red line days. There are days where it's going to be the majority saying we are going to get the thing done that we feel like we need to get done, and the minority is either going to have to get out of the way or find some compromise that you can live with, or we resort to nuclear options. That doesn't happen often, but it does happen some. It has happened numerous times since I've been there. I don't think Republican, especially this size of Republican majority, doing really Republican things is bad. You're going to have those days. You just don't have many of them. I think it's the other stuff. It's the sitting down and going through and kind of tackling a really complex utility issue or a really complex public safety issue. Those are the things that really matter to people. You know, if you ask the swath of the center left and the center right, call it, 60% of the electorate, 30% on both sides of the middle, what they want, a good opportunity for their kids to go to school. They want a job. They want a community that's safe. They want a reliable energy grid, and everything else is kind of secondary. I think if we talked about those things and did those things well, and some days we do, some days we don't, it gives us a license to do some of this other stuff. But we got to make sure, and the folks that are going to govern after I'm gone, you got to make sure you're focusing on things that people care about, because it doesn't matter how red the state is right now, which I think it certainly is a 55-45, maybe even 57-43 type of Republican majority in the state. But that's going to change. The Democrats held the majority for decades before the Republicans took over. And so my advice and my hope for Republicans who will govern after me is make sure you are not at the expense of things that people are talking about doing, the things that appease the far right parts of your party, you got to do them both. Because if you don't do the thing that matters to people, eventually they're going to kick you out. That's just the nature of the beast.
I want to move on to this session. And one of the subplots of this legislative session, at least in the beginning, was this intense legislative fight between GOP leadership and the Missouri Freedom Caucus. They had argued that people like you weren't prioritizing conservative priorities. What did you make of that criticism?
Well, I mean, they're always going to find something to criticize me for. It's been a lot of different things over the course of my 6 years that I've been in one of those two leadership positions. It comes with territory. I mean, I think those folks, for the most part, I've said this numerous times now, the best way I can describe it is they broke the place so that they could say it was broken. And you know, this notion that that everything's rigged and government's it's all one big conspiracy. You know, that does gin up some emotion with certain folks. I get it. I understand it. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to stoop to that level. I'm going to be honest with folks that I represent. Sometimes I'm going to agree with them and sometimes I won't. But you know, those guys have resorted to kind of a different way of trying to use the Senate as a platform to advance their political careers. I don't think it's going to be successful, but you know, we'll find out. I guess this year is a pretty good case study. I think they'll have, you know, a Freedom Caucus member in most all of these statewide races and in the congressional race. So we'll see. You know, I never took it too personal. I can still sit down with Senator Igel most days and have a perfectly pleasant conversation. We have moments where we disagree, and those have been, well documented over the course of time. But we still have managed to, you know, maintain a cordial relationship, we'll take the next few weeks as they come. We have the FRA, we've got the budget. I assume both of those things are going to be terribly complicated and terribly painful, but we'll get them both done. I think it's always been I've always known what I wanted to accomplish when I kind of went into battle in one of these things. I think the fatal flaw, and I've told this to Bill and some of those guys over the course of time, they get into a situation, they don't know what the positive outcome is. They want noise, they want chaos, they want people thinking that they're doing the Lord's work in some sort of weird way, but they don't know what a win is. And so if you can't define your win in the legislature, then you're just kind of going to wander aimlessly, and you're going to ask other people to do your job for you. They've tried to take shortcuts, repeatedly over the course of time, while everybody else has just been putting their head down and doing their work and asking people for votes and getting votes out of committee and getting chairmen to move their bills. And, you know, that's the nature of the process. It's way more complicated, and it requires more work. But a vast majority of senators do that, and even some of their folks. Andrew Koenig is a perfect example of somebody who knows how to get a bill done, and even though he's a part of their crew, has still been incredibly successful, was the sponsor of the education bill that we just passed. So you can still do your work and be extremely conservative. Some of those guys have just decided not to do the work, and they just would rather make noise, and, you know, that's the decision they've made, and wasn't the decision I was going to make.
One more question before I let you go. You mentioned the budget and the FRA, which is the federal reimbursement allowance, which is a tax hospitals place on themselves in order to fund the state's Medicaid program. You kind of suggested those could be contentious processes in the second half of session. Do you think you could pass both of those things without coming out the other side feeling like it was basically a war to get them passed? Or more specifically, do you think you can get those passed without being forced to go into special session to either pass the budget or pass the FRA?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's going to be a war. I haven't heard anything, the rhetoric from the Freedom Caucus guys to make me think it's not going to be. I think we can get it done without going to special. Again, I would challenge those guys to figure out what a win is, because you're not going to stop the FRA. We're not going to not pass a budget. Those would be two of the most irresponsible things that we could do, certainly from a conservative perspective. And so you're not going to, if the goal is to stand in the way, you know, in total, that's not a realistic goal. It's not going to happen. So I don't actually know what a win looks like for them, other than you know, just chaos for its own sake. And maybe that's what they're interested in. I don't honestly know. But you know, I think we'll get it done. If it's in special, it's in special. And for the folks who are running, it cuts into, you know, their ability to go campaign and go, you know, tell voters why they're the best person for the job. I don't know if that's a motivation or not, but you know, it's like I said, we're not going to not do it. It's just a matter of how painful it is and how much time it takes. But we'll get there by the end of it for sure.
That was Missouri State Senator and Senate President Pro Tem Caleb Rowden. He spoke last week with St. Louis Public Radio's Jason Rosenbaum and Sarah Kellogg.
This episode was produced by Jason Rosenbaum.
Our audio engineer is Aaron Dorr. This podcast was mixed and edited by Aaron.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
St. Louis on the Air proudly supports local artists by using music from Life Creative Group.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
Hi there. If you listen to St. Louis on the Air on Google Podcasts, you may have heard that Google will soon discontinue their podcasting app. So we want to encourage you to find our show in other places. You can listen on the St. Louis Public Radio app. We're also on platforms like Apple, Spotify, and wherever you can get podcasts. It doesn't matter where you find your favorite St. Louis Public Radio shows, just that you do. Thanks for listening.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri St. Louis.
Support comes from the Missouri Forest Products Association. Missouri produces wood pallets, railroad ties, white oak barrels, hardwood floors, and more. Details on the variety of products made in the state are at choosewood.com.